Welcome to Shanahan on Literacy, the site where we believe there is nothing more noble than to teach somebody to read. Today we're going to get into the issues of the art of teaching versus the science of teaching. Which is better? What do we have to do regarding art and science? I received a letter from a teacher, and I'm only going to quote a little of it. With all the emphasis on science of reading, what about the art of teaching? Do you think there's a place for that? This was a much longer letter. She had a few not such nice things to say about me because of my support of the science of reading. And so her point, though, ultimately was, what about the art of teaching? Where does that go? Aren't we throwing something out that we should be preserving? And so, you know, do I think there's a place for the art of teaching? And my response is, indeed, I do think there is. Teaching is an act of practical reasoning, persuasiveness, problem solving, and communication. It need be shaped by science, but much of it is improvisation rooted in experience. Science may contribute to that, but it will never be sufficient. Art must have its place. It might help to examine the experience of other fields to think about this. Medicine, for instance, has had a much longer and more obsessive relationship with science than has education. Where are they on this art-science continuum? My medical colleagues are grappling to preserve the humanity in their practice while inundated with technologies, tests, and data. For a long time, art versus science in medicine was much akin to the undercard at a boxing match, with the touts arguing over the under-over. No one could be sure who would win. These days, it's still usually posed as a duality, though physicians seem to be growing more comfortable with the idea that wisdom and knowledge deserve a seat at the table. A doctor can prescribe all the right meds and administer all the approved regimens and still show empathy for patients, smiling, making eye contact, listening, developing rapport, laying on hands, and sometimes even going off protocol when it makes sense. Maybe we educators start from a better spot. Witness Chase Young, David Page, and Tim Rosinski's book, Artfully Teaching the Science of Reading. That title certainly argues for a unity in this regard. I suspect tension over this comes from trying to transform education from an enterprise that was full tilt boogie on the arts end to one that now must accommodate science. Art, the older colleague, believes it deserves respect for its years of service and the wisdom it has gained from that experience. Science, the brash upstart, is sure it has all the answers and possesses the seemingly limitless energy of youth. When I entered teaching, it was mostly a field of art. There wasn't much research and few decisions were based on it. Likewise, there was little data to go on. States were just starting to evaluate reading and math. Without data or research, teachers had a great deal of latitude. As a beginning teacher, I picked the textbooks I wanted to teach from and organized my classroom as I chose. Occasionally, I'd receive advice from senior colleagues, teacher lore. This tended to be of the don't smile until after Christmas variety and often was contradicted by other counsel. In some schools, a principal or a clique of older teachers might exercise authority over these kinds of choices, but those resources based more on opinion than knowledge. Now, that may sound idyllic to many of you these days, and it was, in a way. It was also pretty self-satisfied. We were certain that we were terrific and that the kids were doing as well as possible. Without tests, there could be no contradiction. Principals evaluated teacher performance with a heavy emphasis on classroom order and parent satisfaction. Learning wasn't usually central to those kinds of reviews. Teachers stayed out of each other's lanes. We were all equally effective. If anyone stood out, it was due to a unique personality, not to more effective practice, or so we thought. Parents didn't always surrender to this fiction. They figured out which teachers were best and pressured principals to assign their kids there. Best may have been due to better spelling lessons or to having just the right personality to appeal to mom and dad. Both sweet and demanding were likely seen as positive, with crabby always a negative indicator. The idea of requiring standardized assessments and scientific research to the mix had to do with a growing realization that students weren't learning as much as we had assumed. The tools of science could allow us a more reliable evaluation and more potent learning opportunities for the kids. At least that was the theory. How does this play out in practice? Well, I would not want individual teachers deciding which reading skills should be taught. A teacher might be satisfied with her lessons that routinely omitted phonics or some other key element, and her kids performed to her satisfaction. Perhaps she was successful, though that's hard to determine without actual data, and a lack of past complaint isn't evidence. Perhaps her students were taught the missing skills at home in the past, so the value of that content would not be evident. The determination of what needs to be taught in reading is better left to the science. Comparative studies with lots of kids can do a better job of distinguishing the necessary from the optional. Determining the best approaches to teaching has proved somewhat more daunting. It's not that studies can't identify practices that seem effective, both generally and more specifically for some reading components. Some of my general examples are lessons that have clear purposes are better than those that don't, or lots of teacher-student interaction is a plus. Clear explanations can help, and sufficient repetition and informative feedback are again, positive. Those that are more specific to certain aspects of teaching reading would be examples like phonemic awareness lessons that include the ABCs, or phonics lessons that include encoding practice, not just decoding practice, or comprehension lessons where the kids learn to connect the text with their prior knowledge. Those are all pluses. Yes, with research, we can identify potentially positive practices. What we can't do is tell teachers how best to implement these insights in real classrooms. Having everyone mindlessly read a purpose-setting script at the start of a lesson to make sure that everybody knows what the purpose is may be a no-brainer. Noticing that some kids are neglecting that purpose seems more in the realm of art, however. For instance, in a dictionary assignment, students are to read a passage and copy the correct definition of some highlighted words. Now, we can quibble about that assignment in a moment, but the purpose is to make kids aware of the multiplicity of definitions for many words, of the need to identify the correct definitions, and to gain some practice in doing that. What of the kids who decide the fastest way to the finish line, which is maybe their purpose, is to copy each word's shortest definition, not necessarily the one that fits context best. Completing the task, but ignoring the purpose. Now, yeah, I agree this lesson would be better if the students just recorded the number of the correct definition or were to translate the definition into their own words rather than copying, but that isn't the point. Science says that clarity of purpose matters and that good teachers start lessons with an explanation of purpose. Art says that students may ignore the stated purpose and replace it with something superficial and less supportive of learning. Artful teachers must be vigilant of kids who are only completing tasks. Completing tasks isn't our point. I work hard on the science part, not because I'm anti-art, but because that has been a missing piece. A piece that I can add. The idea of teaching those things that have led to greater learning appeals to me. The same can be said for teaching in ways that have been found more successful. Maybe I'm all in on that approach because I understand that research-based approaches don't work. They're made to work. See, if you understand that, then this science of reading thing doesn't seem like such an encroachment. In the studies, teachers worked hard. Using certain tools, of course, but they worked hard to confer a learning advantage. Positive results say that they succeeded. Multiple studies say several teachers were able to succeed this way. I can't be sure that I can teach this well, but knowing that others have done so and how they went about that is a good start. The science of reading isn't one of blind compliance or high fidelity implementation. Science reveals what can work. The art of teaching suggests what I might do to make that science work. That means I'm going to try to build rapport with my students, looking them in the eye, smiling frequently, bumping fists to reward success. I'm going to try to be patient, too. Yes, I did just explain this, and little Jimmy is proceeding as if I hadn't. I'd love to hide the rascal, but it would be better to explain it again. Some kids just need more repetitions and practice than others. Some scientists claim that kids need 8 repetitions of something before it sticks. They might be right. However, I've got a group of kids who are on repetition 11, and I want to pull my hair out. It would probably be better to go for repetition 12 than to do a Dwayne Johnson imitation. Just in case you don't know, Dwayne Johnson's bald. Science and art are both about trying to maximize student learning. Science powerfully identifies what has been proven to be workable, not what works, what's workable. I believe only foolish educators would ignore the valuable insights it offers. But those educators must recognize that these findings cannot be implemented successfully without a lot of effort aimed at making them work. Art, on the other hand, includes everything else that teachers do to increase success. For me, William Faulkner's definition of art is best. Art means anything consciously well done. I'm going to say that again. Art means or refers to anything consciously well done. That's where patience, careful listening, empathy, rapport, clarity, and persistence come in. Knowing when to double down and when to back off. Implementing a science of reading successfully requires a thoughtful dose of such ingredients, items that may not have shown up in the research study, but which certainly were in the classrooms with the greatest learning. Remember the old commercial? Peanut butter and chocolate and peanut butter, 2 great flavors that taste great together. Perhaps we need to hire an advertising exec to come up with something like art and science, science and art, 2 great sources of success that work great together. I doubt that will sell anything, but its heart's in the right place. And with that, that'll be my final word on the art and science of teaching reading. I hope that person, I don't know if it was a man or a woman, it was signed anonymous. I don't know if anonymous is happy with what I had to say here, but I think there's some useful thoughts here that I hope you'll consider. With that, I'd like to thank our sound engineer, Greg Johnson. If you are interested in having a written copy of these remarks, go to Shanahan on Literacy on the internet, and you will find this blog under the title The Science of Reading versus the Art of Teaching Reading, and it posted on August 24th, 2024. With that, thank you for tuning in. I look forward to seeing you up the road a piece.